Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vauquette. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, Connecticut hosted its first Farm Aid recently, and the award-winning For the People was there covering it from top to bottom. Each year, Farm Aid board members Willie Nelson, Neil Young, John Mellencamp, and Dave Matthews host a Farm Aid festival to bring together a wide variety of artists, farmers, and fans for one mission: keeping family farmers on the land. Since 1985, Farm Aid has raised more than $53 million to help family farmers thrive all over the country while inspiring millions of people to take part in the good food movement. And today we're bringing you the first and second of a three-part special report straight from the Xfinity Theater in Hartford, where we talked with farmers, organizers, and artists, as well as attending an informative and inspiring pre-show press conference. So let's go to that press conference right now and kick off things with these brief remarks from Farm Aid's senior board member and co-founder, Willie Nelson, coming up right after this important announcement. The Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness has announced that it's going to be once again joining forces with Connecticut Realtors, Citizens Bank, and United Way of Central and Northeastern Connecticut to engage people throughout the state in holding Paddington Bear Raisers. These are drives to help local families. Paddington is the coalition's official spokesbearer for their Be Homeful project, which engages kids, families, and communities in learning about how homelessness affects local children and taking action to help. From now through December, for every $25 donated, a toy, bear, book, or baby gift will be presented to a child in a Connecticut shelter. Funds raised will provide much-needed emergency shelter diversion funds that frontline workers can access to help local families remain housed. CCEH is providing holiday Paddington Bear Raiser kits to companies, congregations, groups, and communities holding drives. To order your own Bear Raiser kit, just call 860-721-7876 or click on cceh.org.
Now I'm going to go to the other wedding. Willie Nelson, you've heard countless stories about the difficulties of farming on the road over the years. It's what drove you to start Farm Aid. But there's so many farmers in this audience today who are struggling and yet still continuing to hope and to fight. Why do you think it's important that we all fight for family farmers?
Well, I think the family farmers are the keepers of the soil, the land. They feed us, and everybody eats, so everyone should be very concerned about who does their food. Where does it come from? Does it come from 1,500 miles away on a truck pulling it in, or does it come from across the road over there from a local farmer who knows what you like, knows what you need? I would hope that most of it comes from the local farmers.
I'm always running into this guy, farmers markets, farms. Of course, he's the Connecticut Agricultural Commissioner, Stephen Ravitsky. Steve, I mean, Connecticut's now on a global stage from a farming perspective, and you and I were talking 6, 7, 8 years ago, right? About how you hoped the traction was going to catch on and younger people were going to start farming, and that you had a vision that small farms were really going to be the future of agriculture in Connecticut. And here you are today, not just you talking about it, but some of the luminaries of Farm Aid talking about how Connecticut is really a national leader in launching small boutique and young farmers.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? Here we are, Farm Aid, here in Connecticut. It is pretty amazing. In the last Ag Census, it showed that we had increased the number of farms here in Connecticut by 22%. And like you said, farms are a little bit smaller. We've shown an increase in new and beginning farmers, some of them young, some of them not so young, but people who have changed careers and want people who want to go into farming and agriculture. And the statistics show that one out of every three farms is actually run by a woman. So things are really happening here. We are experiencing an upward spiral. Some sectors still have challenges, significant challenges, dairy in particular. But agriculture, the state of agriculture in Connecticut is pretty damn good.
Yeah. We've also, we've had past few years now, but this year in particular, had real whipsaw weather situations. But in past years, your department and the state of Connecticut has really done a great job on behalf of its farmers, not only internally, but working with federal officials and a huge network of other nonprofit and service agencies and support agencies. How are things looking this year in terms of weather-related issues for Connecticut farmers?
It's been a tough year, I got to tell you. And with past weather events, I really have to take my hat off to the governor. Governor Malloy made available to Connecticut farmers $5 million in emergency aid as a result. You know, we had wicked snowstorms that caused a lot of greenhouses and hoop houses to collapse. We had hurricanes. We had a tornado. It was just horrendous, and farmers were really down and out. And the program that the governor put together really was able to lift all of those farmers up, which was an incredible shot in the arm for them at the time. And here we are this year. And it all depends on where you are in the state of Connecticut and what sector you're producing in. But for quite a few of our vegetable farmers and fruit farmers, the weather this year has been really hard. We've had so much rain, and it's been really hot and humid. And for a lot of our crops, that was not kind to volume. But, you know, farmers know that farming is hard business, and they pick themselves up, and they work hard to fill in the gaps. And one of the good things that Connecticut farmers have done over time is to diversify their operations, because they know that Mother Nature often is not kind. So if they diversify, they manage their risks. If they have a loss in one area, oftentimes they can make it up in another, and that's a good thing.
Well, more than half a decade ago, as we earlier said, we were talking about the future of Connecticut being small boutique farms and diversified operations, everything from corn mazes to creameries to kind of destination farming for tourism, aquaculture. As we stand here now at Farm Aid 2018, talking to you as the State Agriculture Commissioner, What's the farthest defined point on your radar that you're willing to talk about in terms of what we might be looking at 5 years or 10 years down the road here in Connecticut? Somebody made a great comment. I think it was Dave Matthews who said they're not knocking down houses to build farms anymore. Certainly, that's a situation here in Connecticut. What's a goal of yours, or what do you see out there on the radar for Connecticut farms?
So if you take a look at what the opportunities are and what the challenges are, I'll start with some opportunities. There is a great opportunity to get Connecticut grown, to enhance Connecticut grown in our schools. So looking at what the Norwich school system has done in terms of procuring from local farmers, doing some light processing in the school cafeterias, and then freezing that food to be served during the school year. We as a state invested over about 5 years less than $150,000 for that school system that allowed them to put the infrastructure in place to be able to do that. And now they're doing so much good work there, working with local farmers and procuring that food, that they're also supplying food to other school districts. That could be replicated whether it's K through 8 or high schools, colleges and universities, hospitals. I think the room for growth for Connecticut farmers is to get Connecticut-grown product into those into that food service area. You know, one of the challenges that we continue to have here in Connecticut is that Land is very expensive, and it's hard for farmers to get on good ground. And while we've had an increase in new and beginning farmers, the challenge for them is to find land that they can farm. And we do have some competition for good land, whether it's development or other non-agricultural uses. The latest
solar
development has taken a lot of land out of production in Connecticut. So
I guess they shouldn't call them solar farms because they're taking farm away.
They are not farms.
Solar taking farms away. Very good. Well, Agriculture Commissioner Stephen Ravitsky, congratulations on the role you played in bringing farm aid to Connecticut for the very first time. We talk often, and I look forward to our next conversation in ways we could partner as a media organization and as a state to help Connecticut farmers survive, sustain, and to become sustainable and grow. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for all you do.
To promote yourself, so this is great. We are here at Farm Aid 2018 in Hartford, Connecticut. I still am pinching myself over this. This is great. We're talking about the new Connecticut Farmer Alliance with a relatively new farmer, the first of maybe many generations. Charlotte Ross is with me. Her farm is Sweet Baker Farm in Lebanon, Connecticut. And do you have an area of specialty of what you grow or purvey?
Yeah, it's a Sweet Acre Farm, and it is 2 acres of certified organic vegetables. So we do lots of mixed vegetables. We sell to farmers markets, co-ops and grocers, and restaurants in the greater Hartford area.
Okay. So 8, 9, 10 years ago, you're kind of thinking about what to do with your life, and you decided you wanted to go into farming? Is that how it worked?
My husband and I had larger and larger gardens in the backyard and worked for a couple of farms around Connecticut, got a taste for it, and it really kind of is a slow addiction. So we got suckered in, I guess, and ended up renting land in a few places over the course of 3 years and found a place to buy in Lebanon. In 2014, we've been there for 5 years.
That's great. On your own parcel. That's interesting because in interviewing Carolyn Mugar, who is the founder of Executive Director of Farm Aid, she was talking about the challenges and how a lot of people who were in positions like yours couldn't eventually find a place to call their own, so they ended up having to get out of farming because it just got the profit line got too narrow or went upside down.
Oh, it is an incredibly narrow profit margin for sure. And with the summers like the one we just had, which is difficult for everybody in the region, you really get worried because when you have a great season, maybe you make a buck. And when you have a bad season, which is inevitable, you probably
really
don't.
Yeah. Before, right?
Exactly. I would say our property was kind of a needle in a haystack. A state like Connecticut, we have huge obstacles to finding land and owning land as farmers. It's just so expensive, and the quote-unquote best use of that land is development for houses. So, yeah.
Well, where did the new Connecticut Farmer Alliance enter into your radar? How did that all come about?
Yeah, I joined that group when it was just starting out pretty well, and it's grown immensely since I joined it. There are hundreds of members now, and it's really a networking group. And so we do events, potlucks, we have a hoot nanny every year. And we really just try to bring, especially first-generation farmers, together to get to know each other, to feel their community, to support each other. It's a really hard thing to start out. Farming in general is hard, and then to do it as a first-generation person, learning things all the time and not necessarily knowing how to bulk buy and where to get the best hay and the best grain and et cetera.
Well, what's one of the best benefits that Sweet Baker Farm has enjoyed because you learned about it from someone in the network?
I'm sorry.
Is there anything that you've learned from farmers as you're networking in the New Connecticut Farmer Alliance
that
you've actually plugged in at home?
I would say more that, now we have met people, we have met colleagues, and we've met excellent friends that are doing the same thing. And, I can't point to a larger scale thing that we've learned and implemented, but just having that network there to support us, knowing that we're not alone, knowing that we can reach out when we need, you know, the best way to find new labor for our farm, for instance, or someone to go in with a bulk purchase of grain from Lancaster Ag. You know, it's really just more about community and being part of a group that's learning so much all the time and doing our best.
Well, once again, as a relatively new Connecticut farmer, as you network, what are a couple of the most common challenges or concerns that you and your peers are facing here in Connecticut that either can be impacted or maybe even changed on a municipal or state level if enough people know about it and actually call their state representatives and put a fire under them to do something about it?
Right. Well, so the New Connecticut Farmer Alliance is a chapter of the National Young Farmer Coalition, and they are doing wonderful work in D.C. for us, really trying to bring the young farmer voice to our legislators to protect our monies in the Farm Bill. There's a very small amount of money that's available for the Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Grant in the Farm Bill, and that's always under threat of being cut. And it's a Farm Bill year now, so contacting legislators to make sure that they know that that's our priority, and people who care about local food, that that's their priority is important. We are trying, the National Young Farmer Coalition is doing its best to get a loan forgiveness bill passed, which would designate farmers as public servants, just like teachers and firemen and policemen, and therefore we would be forgiven our student loans as we went into our profession as farmers, because that's a huge obstacle. If you're carrying huge debt coming out of school, how are you going to choose to be a farmer, even if you really just, you know, you really want to do it and you really believe in the cause and joining the ranks? It's hard to make that decision when you're carrying so much debt. So things like that, I mean, the National Young Farmer Coalition is doing a great job representing.
Well, I know right around the time that you became a farmer 8-9 years ago, Connecticut started really getting with it when it came to trying to provide help to young farmers. Were you able to take advantage of any opportunities, at least at the state level, when you were getting started, either from a financial resource or just an informational resource level?
Well, let's see. At the state level, UConn Extension does a great job of connecting with new farmers, and we have been part of a grant that was run through the BFRDP, what I just mentioned from the Farm Bill, and that was a scaling up program. There's a farmer training program that's with the same monies right now called Solid Ground that I work on, actually. And then we have part of our mortgage through the Farm Service Agency, which is on the national level, part of the USDA, the NRCS, Natural Resources and Conservation Service. They give out grants and have programming around natural resource conservation, so putting up high tunnels, drainage projects, etc. And we've definitely applied for some of that.
Very good. Well, I thank you for taking the time. It's near the end of a long day for you, Charlotte Ross, here at Farm Aid 2018 from Lebanon, Connecticut, and representing the New Connecticut Farmer Alliance. But tell people how to find you if they want to swing by and pick up something from farm to table.
Absolutely. We are at the West End Farmers Market every Tuesday from 4 to 7. That's right next to the Mark Twain House in Hartford. We sell a lot through the Willimantic Food Co-op, a wonderful co-op in Willimantic, Connecticut, and sweetacrefarm.com. That's lots of our info.
Sweetacre Farm. Easy to remember. Charlotte Ross, thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Well, we're here in the homegrown village at Farm Aid 2018, and we bumped into someone from East Norwalk. Bob Kunkel is here with Harbor Harvest, but not an aquaculture program, technically, is it, Bob?
No, it's not. It's actually a trip back in history to try to get farmers, agriculture, and the maritime industry back together by building a new regional transportation hub to deliver local farm products between Connecticut and Long Island.
Excellent. So are you the fire under this kettle?
They say I'm the guy. I'm the guy. But we're building hybrid catamarans with a lithium battery system, so there's no emissions, no environmental impact, and no sound. And these boats are going to be able to take local farmers and open up their regional markets by introducing them to Connecticut markets, and also introducing the Long Island guys over in Long Island to Connecticut, Connecticut into Long Island. Each boat dock will have a retail facility, farmer's market, and butcher shop, and cafe, so that that local farmer can get right into that market and a retail spot and find out whether or not the area where he's trading to is really going to be profitable for him.
And how long before this is in operation?
So our first boat is being built right now in Director's Shipyard in Mamaroneck. We're about 45% complete. We'll deliver the boat in March. We have the one store and retail area in East Norwalk, and we're cutting ground on a Huntington store in Long Island on November 1st, and the boat will be in operation on March of 2019 under the American Marine Highway Program.
And what is the mechanism by which you grow this into what your vision is?
So there's about $9 billion of farm assets between Connecticut and New York. Most of them are family-owned local farms. And when we lost our waterways, the regional transportation system for that farm fell apart as the interstate highway system moved everything inland.
Right.
So we're looking at getting that product down into the New York City, Brooklyn, and the Gold Coast areas of Connecticut and Long Island so those family farmers can move that product. And it's really the farmers that are driving this thing. I'm just an old sailor that wants to be able to help them out.
I have to think, though, that there are sustainable-minded people with the juice to, put some money muscle behind this idea.
We've got one investor, Per Heidenreich, who is that type of person and wants to see us grow. The American Marine Highway Program with the federal government has asked us to put in a grant with the Connecticut Port Authority, which will be in this week. So we're hoping to see a grant from the government to help support the construction of the second vessel. And then we'll go out. Business model looks good, so we think we can raise money, and introduce people to a real sustainable neighborhood that's keeping the 18-wheelers out of that little area.
And I got to think that any farmer you talk to has got to be saying, where do I sign?
So I've collected about 460 email addresses at FarmAid. We're a sponsor. We made a $10,000 donation to FarmAid. We back Willie and the boys on what they're trying to do here. It's an easy pitch. The local farmers are looking for that regional transportation hub. So I expect it to be successful.
Wow, wicked exciting. Thank you so much. Bob Kunkel is with Harbor Harvest out of East Norwalk. If you want to get in on this ground floor opportunity, call him now.
Come see us at the store. We'll talk.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
We're so pleased to be here at FarmAid with Christina Sandolo, who is the executive director of the Green Village Initiative that operates the Reservoir Community Farm in Bridgeport.
Yeah.
And she's going to tell you that she doesn't. She's not going to teach us how to grow carrots, but she's going to teach us how you're really doing incredible, incredible stuff in Bridgeport, right?
Yeah, I get to work with an incredibly dedicated, passionate team of young farmers who grow 5,000 pounds of food at Reservoir Community Farm. And every time I'm on that site, I learn from them. Green Village Initiative is a nonprofit. We are a food justice and urban agriculture nonprofit. So we're growing food, knowledge, leadership for the community of Bridgeport to create a more just food system in that city. We not only operate Reservoir Community Farm, we also support community gardens and school gardens, almost 30 gardens across Bridgeport, where folks can grow food for their dinner tables, and where teachers can utilize outdoor gardens as outdoor classrooms. We also have a youth leadership program, which is kind of the heart and soul of our organization, and that's the program through which we're growing new young farmers and agents of change and agents of social justice in Bridgeport and beyond.
So have you been involved in advocacy and activism
For your entire career, for your entire life? How did this all happen for you?
Food specifically has always been an incredibly important part of my life. I do remember growing, being out in the yard with my dad and putting some seeds in the dirt and being able to reap the benefits of that. And we just, you know, as an Italian family, we always had food as a central core part of our lifestyle and of our family and of our getting together. So that has always been incredibly important to me. So to be able to work with folks and make sure that folks are participating in the food system in whatever way they want to is my passion. So not only are we educating, providing opportunities for folks to grow their own food for their dinner tables, we're also running urban farmer training programs where gardeners can learn how to start growing for markets. We're looking towards sustainability of our programming and of agriculture overall in Bridgeport through developing an urban agriculture master plan with the city of Bridgeport. We get to work with farmers markets, culinary education, culinary trainers to connect kind of the dots within the food system so that hopefully our growers can sell, you know, their hot sauce to folks who are so that hopefully our growers can sell their hot peppers that they're growing in their garden sites to new entrepreneurial chefs who are emerging within Bridgeport. And then working with the farmers markets allows those, you know, entrepreneurs who are growing food or doing value-added food to utilize those farmers market sites as test sites and incubators. Yeah. So it's nice to see this network of sort of social justice and the food system kind of emerge and strengthen in Bridgeport and for local food to be even more accessible across the city.
I guess the biggest success is the shortest distance between the harvest and the table.
Yeah.
And this is so critically important in a city like Bridgeport, and you have such a thriving farmers market scene, the Bridgeport Bucks Initiative. I mean, Bridgeport is working really, really hard to make that happen.
Yeah. So I was lucky enough to work with a farmer, with Nelson Ceccarelli, 10 years ago to start launching farm stands in Bridgeport. And actually, Willie from Ceccarelli Farms is here today. And Nelson was a pioneer in bringing fresh, healthy, affordable food into Bridgeport through these farm stand programs that we created together at a different nonprofit called Wholesome Wave at the time. And so he really helped us launch this farmers market scene in Bridgeport. And so he really took a risk. He said, you know what, I don't know how this is going to go, and I don't know if I'm going to have huge sales in Bridgeport with my produce, but we'll see what happens. And so we worked together, and he was very successful in that first year, especially because we were able to double the value of food stamps at those sites. And so the revenue stream was strong enough that he said, let's keep doing this. And so this is the 10th year that Ceccarelli Farms is down in Bridgeport. Nelson Ceccarelli passed away in January, as Willie mentioned when he was on stage. And so it's just so meaningful to be able to continue to see Willie bring that produce down into Bridgeport. And so from those early years, you know, the farmers market scene has really expanded in Bridgeport, and we now have 7 farmers market sites that are working with Bridgeport. There's probably, I think, about 15 farmers who are coming into Bridgeport. There are new food businesses that are emerging every year who are utilizing those farmers markets as incubators. Sites. We've got a lot of growers in our network who are interested in growing for farmers markets, and we're also hearing that farmers market customers are saying, yes, we love this food and we love that it's Connecticut grown, but we would also love more Bridgeport grown food. We would also love to be able to buy food from our neighbors who we know are talented gardeners and who have generations of knowledge in growing food within their families. So that's what we're working towards.
Awesome. Well, Farm Aid is going to be broadcasting on their own website. They're going to be on YouTube, they're going to be on Access TV, and they're going to be showing video clips in between the musicians, including yours. You're on a global stage now, representing Bridgeport and the Green Village Initiative and the Reservoir Community Farm. So now, you know, what an honor it must be to, like, honor your dad who first brought you out and put your hands in the ground.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to be here. It's what an honor to be on stage with the artists, the founders of Farm Aid, with the food activists, with Michelle Duchon, who's been a food activist for dozens of years, and I got to work with when I was at Wholesome Wave, with Ceccarelli Farm, and Blue Hills Orchard, and the dairy farmers who have been feeding Connecticut for generations, and to be standing next to my amazing team of young farmers here, Alexis and Delisha, who are sort of the new generation of urban farmers growing up in Bridgeport, and really who are the future of social change and food justice in Bridgeport.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People and the second of our three-part special report from FarmAid 2018 at the Xfinity Theater in Hartford, coming up right after this news. The Animal Haven of North Haven is combining its annual dog walk and tag sale events into one awesome party that's coming up on Sunday, October 21st on the North Haven Town Green. The tag sale begins at noon and runs till 4, while the dog walk festivities begin at 1 with registration, followed by the 2 p.m. 1-mile mutt strut, and then at 2:30, there's going to be a costume contest and parade, followed by a pauction and prize drawings at 3. The nonprofit Animal Haven has been serving the greater New Haven area since 1948. It's a no-kill shelter whose mission is to provide a temporary, safe, caring, and humane refuge for homeless, adoptable cats and dogs, and to subsequently place those animals in quality, adoptive, permanent homes. For information on the event, or to support or volunteer, call 203-430-4310 or visit theanimalhavenct.org.
All right. Well, we talked to Christina Sandolo from Green Village Initiative and the Reservoir Community Farm, but the two other stars of the show that were here up on stage today with all the FarmAid family and founders were Delisha Ramsey and Alexis Martin. And you guys, I just heard that some folks sent some video up from Florida while they were filming on TV of the Commissioner of Agriculture and you guys already on TV in Florida. So here you are quickly going to become global voices on the part of urban farming and food justice. So well, tell me a little bit first, Alexis. When was it that you started having a real full and conscious realization that the food you were eating actually like came out of the ground instead of off a shelf?
Well, the first time for me was the very first time I visited Reservoir Community Farm, and they told me I can like pick a tomato off the vine and just eat it. They didn't use any pesticides. It's all grown organically, so the fact that like I can just pick something off without washing it and like putting it in my mouth is like the best feeling ever. There's nothing better than having something really fresh.
So you had artists talking about how important it is for people of your age and your generation to kind of carry on the tradition. And I'm sure today, because I imagine you'll be hanging around FarmAid, you'll be meeting some farmers that are in their 70s and 80s. You'll be meeting some farm families who are hundreds of years of farming. You guys are sort of the beginning of that in a different way, you know, in a downtown way. What do you, so tell me a little bit about how you sort of think about the long game of what you're doing at Reservoir.
Well, I definitely think that in the long run, more people are going to have like more urban farms, like in their like home, like either in their backyard or like by their windowsill or something like that, because fresh food sadly isn't available everywhere for like the affordable cost that we all want it to be at. So I think people are going to gravitate more to urban farming, like knowing how to grow their own food, knowing how to manage their own food, because it's cheaper that way. And also due to the fact that our farmers market, we get like many people from around the area. Our farm is right next to the project, so we get like a lot of people there using like WIC and SNAP. And the fact that we can like we double SNAP and like WIC and programs like that, so other people can get fresh food.
Great, Delisha, you were in Bridgeport, now are at Trumbull.
Yeah, well, so I started out going to school in Bridgeport for I think it was kindergarten, and then for first grade, that's when I started in the Trumbull school system. But my involvement in Bridgeport has been since November of 2012, which is when I started working as a volunteer at Reservoir Community Farm. That's how I got connected with GVI, and I met the co-founders, Monique Bosch, and then I can't remember his name. Dan, I think it was Dan Cyril, but I'm not 100% sure on his last name. And then that's when, like, it sparked up, like, a change in me, and I was like, I want to make an impact in kids' life. Like, that was my lifetime goal of making an impact in kids' lives, because at the end of the day, it's not about me. It's about those little kids that I inspire every single day, because they're going to be the ones that's shaping our generation. They're going to be the ones that's going to be changing the way in which our generation is running. They're going to be the ones that are going to be changing how, like, switching from technology-based to actually, like, going outside and working and on a farm and growing our food rather than having everything come out of machines, which is, like, outright wrong.
Well, one of the things that really made me want to stand up and cheer was when I heard you going, you know, at first your food was coming kind of hermetically sealed in bags and on trays and with covers, and then you went to, like, a hot food line where it was, like, all there for you. And that's such an important experience, I think, to have, that may have maybe even, you know, led you more quickly and passionately toward what you're doing now.
Yeah, I actually did research on why is it that Bridgeport kids have, like, this type of lunch, while in other, like, different cities they have, like, better lunch programs than us. And what I found interesting is that in Bridgeport, the funding that they have to feed kids is less than what Greenwich or Fairfield or Trumbull has. Some of them are not that different, but if you think about Bridgeport, we have three high schools. If you include Fairchild, that's a fourth. But that's, like, more like you have to try to get in to get into the school. Then we also have our middle schools. We have our elementary schools. So if you have $13,000 to feed every single kid within the school district, what can you provide? But you have to meet all these health standards. You're going to hit the bare max or the bare minimum, one or the other. There's no in-between. But if you look at Fairfield, for example, they don't have all, like, that many school systems put into place. If you look at Trumbull, they only have one high school, minus St. Joseph's, which is a private school. Then they have their elementary schools, and then they have their middle schools. But it's not as big or as prominent of a town as Bridgeport is, for example. So they have, like, look at it that way. They have both the same amount of funding, but a different amount of kids to feed. Tell me what whose lunch is going to be better.
Yeah, right. Good point. And the other thing is the quality of the food that you're getting. And, I mean, even if you could bring beans to a daycare center for them to, or some kale or lettuce so they can make a salad for, like, 10 kids in a daycare center, that's turning a corner that may be permanent for them.
Within the first few years that I actually started with working with GBI and RCF, we actually did go into school systems making salads and putting it out. And, like, the change that you see, like, as far as, like, kids, like, oh my gosh, we have salad. Like, I remember hearing from kids, like, from Harding, like, fighting over salad because, like, that was, like, all they had as far as fresh food. Like, come on now. You see that kids want it, so make sure that it's accessible to them. To make a salad, it's, like, nothing. Especially if you get the food donated, there's, like, a lot of places that I believe that would probably be willing to actually donate food just so that kids have access to it, especially in the community. But it has to be about the Board of Education, like, all, like, getting everyone on board, putting it that, let's put it that way. Everyone has to be on board with that mission. You can't have one person and then another person be like, no, they're okay. But if you look at our board, it's not people from Bridgeport. It's people from outside of the city. So they don't understand the problem that we have here.
Well, I asked Alexis, so I want to wrap it up with the same question to you. What's your long game in terms of keeping your hands in the ground and your passion strong for connecting food that's being grown to the shortest trip to the table?
What I actually want to see is that urban agriculture being put into our grocery stores rather than getting our food shipped off from a whole different country that we don't even know. Of course, like, for other fruits and vegetables, like, that are tropical, like, it's not doable, like, for the United States, but you can grow a tomato, you can grow corn, you can grow all these other crops in Connecticut or in, like, different states and mass produce it so then it's accessible to the community. So at least you can say my food is locally grown and it's healthy. It's not like it's from a whole different state and I don't know what they put into it.
You guys are inspiring. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Delicia Ramsey and Alexis Martin. You can see them with their hands in the ground at Reservoir Community Farm in Bridgeport, part of the Green Village Initiative. Awesome, guys. Thank you. All right, we're back here at Farm Aid 2018, and one message was resounding from all of the Found Aid farmers and founders on stage this morning, and that was, you've got to vote. Even Neil Young said, it doesn't matter who you vote for, although he has a preference, that it's just critical to vote. So we're here talking to the people that are getting the vote out and getting folks registered to vote. Alex Barton is a lifelong Hartford resident, and he's here with Headcount. So, Alex, give us the pitch here. What do people need to know about Headcount?
Headcount is a national nonprofit organization. We have a presence at many, many concerts. We're all about just registering people to vote, getting people involved. If you're at a concert, look for us. It takes 2 minutes to register, and you will be, in 3 to 4 weeks, you will be put in the system, and you will be able to vote in the next election. We are always looking for volunteers. We have turbo votes where you can get updates. You can choose to volunteer with us. We'll contact you, and we'll have you come out in October, just in time to register new voters.
The last big push.
Yes, the last big push. It's even more important. This is an election year, so we are pushing even harder. We just want to get people involved.
Yeah. So tell me, a turbo vote, that's for people who are already registered or who register with you on the spot?
Yes.
They can hook up for that?
Yes, so people who are already awesome and registered, or people who are just registering right on the spot, they can also fill out the turbo vote. The turbo vote will give your name, your email, and your address so we know what local is. And 2 weeks before anything happens with your local election, you'll get a quick email just as a reminder. I've signed up for it myself. And it's great. I always lose track of what I'm doing. It's another great reminder to have.
Saving the date. So I guess probably the ultimate goal is putting Headcount out of business by making sure every single American is registered to vote. We could only hope that would ever happen, but you've been involved with this for a while, right?
Yes, I've been part of Headcount for over 3 years now. I just recently became the team leader in the Hartford area, so I'm trying to bring more of a Headcount presence here in Hartford, and we hope to create more relationships with venues to bring Headcount to these shows, to get more people aware of what we're trying to do, to get more volunteers involved, to get more people registered. So.
Well, tell me what you've seen in just the 3 years you've been involved with Headcount. I have to imagine some of the concerns and controversies and issues that are going on at the nation's capital are making it so that there's a lot more people that you're encountering at these events that are already registered maybe than when you first even started 3 years ago.
Well, while I can't comment specifically on any parties,
yeah.
I will definitely say that there has in the most recent years there has been a lot more attention to what's going on politically. A lot more people know who Headcount is, and we have a lot more people actually walking up to our tent and saying, "Wow, I've heard about you guys. You guys are great. Let me register. What do I have to do? Give me anything that I need to get more involved. I want to get more involved." So it's great to see people wanting to get more involved. It's great to see people knowing who we are.
Yep.
And it's just overall there is the excitement has grown, and it's great.
So folks are coming through the gate at Farm Aid, and one of the first things that some of them are going to see is eggs. And I doubt if any will be thrown today because people are so respectful and the effort is so important. We're talking with Carl Johnson with Pete and Jerry's Organic Eggs. He's here with calming one of his hens. Carl, welcome to Farm Aid.
Thank you. We're pleased to be here.
Is your company based here in Connecticut, or where are you?
No, our company is based in Monroe, New Hampshire.
Okay.
That's where our home farm is. And then we have 134 small family-owned farms that produce eggs for us in 13 states, all 13 Northeast states.
But this whole thing just started with you as an egg and chicken farmer?
Yeah, it started with the Ward family, which owned this farm, and they, once they decided to really grow and started to grow, rather than just becoming one big egg farm, they decided to start contracting with small family-owned farms. And we contracted with our first farm in 2001, and now we're up to 134 small family-owned farms in 13 states. Mm-hmm. And they're all literally small family-owned farms. There's no, I think the range in chickens is from 5 to about 20,000 hens, which is a, seems like a lot, but that's a small egg farm. And that's just the way we want to do it. We love supporting small farms, and we think that's the best, most sustainable way to go.
Yeah. Well, tell me something. I go into a grocery store and I see large size eggs for $2.99 and jumbo eggs for $1.79, sometimes 99 cents. I see them coming from Pennsylvania. I see kind of corporate branded organic. I see corporate branded non-organic. Can you tell us and educate us a little bit on the differences in the eggs that we can choose when we either go to a farm or to a grocery store?
Well, there's so many misleading labels on eggs. One of the biggest misleading ones is cage-free, and all cage-free means is not in a cage. It doesn't mean the hens are well cared for, or it doesn't, just means not in a cage. So what you want to look for is free-range eggs and certified humane. And certified humane is a third-party auditing company that audits all of our farms and make sure that we're following their very strict regulations about how to raise hens and how to care for the hens. So that's what I would look for, is certified free range and certified by certified humane, and then you know that you're getting hens that really get outside every day and are well taken care of.
Mm-hmm. And so when we've seen these sometimes really horrible videos of these factory egg farms, and then we see farms like yours with free-range hens. Do people say the taste is different? Is there actually something physiologically or chemically or biologically different in the eggs?
Well, part of the, our eggs taste better. We think they taste better, and people tell us they taste better, and a lot of that is because they're fresher. I mean, just the way our company has grown, we get our eggs to market faster than a lot of companies. Mm-hmm. And that means they taste better, because fresh eggs taste better than old eggs. So, and as far as nutrition, eggs are all pretty much the same nutrition. It's just how well they taste and how well you want your, how you want your eggs produced. What do you want them to come from? Big hens crowded into big cages or big barns, or whether you want hens that are outside every day and getting sun and on the grass. And so it's really a conscious decision that we as consumers make to buy eggs that are produced sustainably.
So would you say that's your competitive edge against factory farms, is just, you know, the combination of the taste and the concept that the producer of the eggs is just in a much better place when they're producing?
Yeah, I think consumers are becoming aware of how terribly some of our food is produced. And people are willing, and this is the really interesting part, that our eggs cost 3 to 4 times as much as those commodity eggs that you can buy. And people are willing to spend the extra because they believe in what we're doing.
And what about what's going into the egg producer in terms of chicken feed?
We feed our hens all soy for protein and corn for carbohydrates. And we there's no GMOs in any of our organic feed. There's no hormones, no antibiotics in any of our feed. And that's just the
Which
way
it is. Which
may not
be the case at the factory farm.
Right. In fact, most of the big factory farms, they have to prophylactically give the hens, and it's the same with hogs and all kinds of animals, because the animals are so close and so many of them, they have to prophylactically give them antibiotics to keep them from getting sick. So, whoop.
All right. Well, the hen's getting restless.
Yes, he is.
And I'm getting hungry, so Won't be having chicken today, honey. Sorry. Carl Johnson with one of the many hens that are here from Pete and Jerry's Organic Eggs up in New Hampshire. Welcome to Connecticut. Welcome to Farm Aid. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Great. We're happy to be here and happy to support Farm Aid.
And it's great to be here with you. It really is. And we've been doing this for a long time. But there's a real good reason why we've been doing this. And there's something you can do. We talk about all of the details. All these people come up and they tell their human stories, which are all great, and we relate to it and everything. But what can we do? What can you do? And every day, because every day when the farmer wakes up, it doesn't matter what's happening. He has to go to work, or she has to go to work. They have to do what they have to do. They have to take care of the animals. They have to take care of the fields. They have to make sure the equipment's working. They have to make sure that they got the feed. They have to do all of these things or things die. And that's the way they wake up in the morning. So when you're driving down the street in your car, whether it's a brand new Cadillac or an old beat up Subaru, you should never pass a farmer's market without going in and taking part in humanity.
Yeah.
It's not a line at a supermarket. It's people. And I wish there were a lot more people here right now, because the people who aren't here, the people who don't know this, they're the people who need to know it. They're the ones who need to know that if they drive by a farmer's market, they're killing a farm. You can't drive by it anymore. You have to go in and you have to buy something. You have to talk to these people, get to know them, get to realize how good it feels to buy something from someone who you like, who you know is committed to doing a good thing. Forget about the economy and all that crap. John did a great job of explaining that to us. I really think that it's no-brainer to have a great economy if you sell all of the jewels. If you get rid of all of the good stuff and just give it away to people, of course you're going to make more money in the short term. And that's what this government is doing. They're giving away our future. They're giving away our environment. They're giving away the future of farming. They're giving away the future of life in America for a short-term, three-month gain for a corporate board to review and congratulate each other on how well they're doing and then hope that they get elected again. If you vote, and you vote for whoever you believe in. If you believe in Trump, vote for Trump. If you don't believe in Trump, go out and vote them out. Vote them all out if you don't believe in them. I respect whoever you vote for, I respect you for voting. I'm a Canadian. I can't vote. If I could vote here, I would. But it's a lie. I'm a Canadian. Okay? That's what I am. I've been called a lot of things by this kid in the White House. But I am a Canadian, and I love America. There's nothing here that needs to be made great again. So, these people that you just can't drive by the farmers and leave them there. If you do, they're going to die. This whole thing's going to be gone. The corporate farms suck. They have no responsibility to anybody except for the board, and they have to make a certain amount of money every 3 months. So they're poisoning you, and your food is bad. They're using all these chemicals from other corporations. They're doing all of these things. But you can stop this if you stand up. But I mean stand up. Go buy some of that food, and don't buy the other food. Just don't do it. Don't support it. It's a small thing that you can do yourself, but at least you can do it yourself. You don't have to try to focus on all of the crap that we've all been saying, which is all true, by the way, and try to sort out how you can do something. What did you learn? It doesn't matter. Just don't drive by another farmer's market ever again without going in and buying something. Say hello to the people. It's humanity. It's you and I and the earth. That's what it is. We are under fire. We are under attack. You have to understand how brutal this really is. We're standing here, and there's not that many of us, and these guys are never going to give up, and these farmers are never going to get up. All these people up here, they're all so committed, just like I am, to making a difference and trying to do this together. So please, don't abandon the farmers of America. Forget about buying food. Well, they all need food. Yeah, well, it's like 85-95% of the food in America comes out of corporations in bad farming practices that damage the land and damage the food and damage your body and damage your baby's body and damage their baby's bodies. And eventually, the generations are going to fade away, and this is just going to be a memory, what we used to have in the 50s, in the 1950s and 60s, and before that, when this country was so beautiful. And you can still see it if you drive around and you look at little farms. You can still see it, but it's under fire. So please, do whatever you have to do. Vote, stop your car, buy an orange, buy something. But don't just sit there and go home and think you did the right thing. Thank you.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for airtime in writing to me via email at john.voket, that's john.voket, at connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast without permission of Connoisseur Media. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scotts, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voket. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and important information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.